Let's hear from the audience. What's some things that are important about words? What's
they
some things?
Words have meaning.
They create.
Words create. What else do words do? Words bring life. What else do words do? Words are powerful. What else? Words are thought carriers. What do words do? Words tell stories. What else do words?
Inspire.
Words inspire.
Empower.
Words empower.
Teach.
Words teach. Words instruct. Words bring correction. Words bring hope. Words bring encouragement. Words bring challenge. Now you see, words are important. So I want all of you to know that you are important. Even if your writing project never turns into a huge book or whatever, your words are important however you write them, whether it's a note, whether it's a book, whether it's a manual, whether it's a dream. The words that you speak, the words that you write, type, and say through whatever communication it is, they're important. And we have three of us here going to talk about different things in the writing aspect. We're going to have Simon come and share. We're going to let Diane introduce him. So I'm going to pray while she comes over. Lord, I thank you for each and every important person in this room, Lord. We just pray a blessing on their lives. Lord, we pray that they would be encouraged and challenged and even strengthened, Lord, for the journey of life. Life is a challenge. There's a lot going on. But Lord, I pray for just windows of opportunity for each of these precious people to do what they're called to do and share important words through writing. Thank you, Lord. Go ahead, Diana. This is Diana Mondi. She is an important person in Africa for writing, teaching, and her role in the apostolic ministry.
Yeah, okay.
And she's involved with Simon, and she heard Simon speak, so go ahead.
Right, yes. Simon Rua is a son in the faith, along with his wife, Virginia, who I saw with her. There she is, yeah. Simon and Virginia are based out of Dove, Nairobi, but currently serving in Zambia with a ministry called Love's Door. And I don't know if they'll have time to tell you about that or not, but they are. Simon shared with us at the Dove Africa conference on this topic, and I just felt like we need to hear that again. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And hi, everyone. I'm so honored. I feel so privileged to share what I know in this area of writing. I'm not a professional writer. I at least write my notes every Sunday before I preach. So when people were sharing about what brought them here, and I had so many people talk about, you know, their interest is to write books. So what I'm going to be sharing is not probably going to help with books, but I'm mainly going to share on how we can use the online platform to make an impact in writing. And so starting from whether it's a book, whether you're publishing a book, or it's a simple statement that you just post online, whatever level you're in. So God started, these thoughts started developing in my mind when I read this scripture, Matthew 10:27. It says, "What I tell you now in the darkness, shout abroad when daybreak comes. What I whisper in your ear, shout from the housetops for all to hear." So this is a passage where Jesus was actually talking about evangelism, and he was sending his disciples to go out and preach the gospel. And here he says, "What I whisper to you in the ear, shout from the housetops for all to hear." And so in the previous times, you know, the housetops were getting a huge platform and having a crusade, and that's still part of the housetops. You know, but I just began to ask myself, what's an unexplored housetop today, or what could be a housetop today? And I realized that there are over in Africa alone, I forget the exact number, but over 50% of the people in Africa use the internet on a daily basis. And those that use the internet on a daily basis, the average person spends at least 4 hours on the internet every day, whether they are sending emails or chatting or doing whatever. So we can easily, I mean, Facebook has more than 3 billion people that use it. And so I thought in today's world, I can't think of a bigger house stop than the online platform. I can't think of a bigger platform than social media. And yet, most of us believers, at least maybe the ones I know in Zambia, still very skeptical about using social media for evangelism. You know, there's a lot of skepticism around it. And yet, this is a house stop that we can utilize for the gospel. And to add to that, social media is actually extremely cheap. You know, you don't need a lot of money to use social media to communicate. It's also extremely fast. At a click, you know, you could reach billions of people. So that's what inspired me to begin to think about this. And so I started being very intentional, and I forget what time I started. But I started being very intentional to use social media to just communicate what the Lord puts in my heart. And I noticed that it was having great impact among people. And I'd like to start with a testimony here of something that happened recently. There are many things that happened, but I want to start with this. So over 6 months ago, I wrote something on my social media account, and I don't remember what it was, but a friend of mine shared it. And when she shared it, a friend of hers saw it, who was at that time going through a very hard time in her marriage. And so whatever I shared, I don't remember what it was, really spoke to her. And she friended me on Facebook. And then she began to follow my posts. And that one day I posted and I said, I'm open to do prayer and counseling for anyone. If you're going through a hard time, reach out and I'll pray with you and do counseling. So this friend reached out, the friend of the friend reached out to me, and she started sharing how her marriage was just going through a rough patch. And I prayed with her, and I've never met this person to date, but I prayed with her online, and unfortunately, they separated with the man that they were living with. They were not married legally. So they separated. But this lady, so I have another discipleship platform that's online. So I prayed with her and then invited her to this discipleship platform. And 6 months later, she gave her life to Christ. She got baptized with the Holy Spirit online. As I was praying with her online, she got filled with the Holy Spirit. And she became an evangelist. Now, what she does is, whatever I teach online, she gathers, she was able to lead 5 of her family members to Christ. There's a niece there, there's a nephew, there's an auntie. So she gathers the 5 of them, and every week they have a cell group meeting at her house from something that I shared online. Just a simple statement on how can I pray with you. So, and there are many stories that I could share here about just healings that God has done online and things like that. So I just like to encourage people that social media is not to be ignored. I know it doesn't sound very spiritual. I know it doesn't sound very, you know, like sometimes it feels like, am I really doing anything, you know? But the impact that can happen just by the simple writings that we post on our social media can really, really change lives. So maybe you're inspired and you're saying, where do I start? Where do I start? And my encouragement would be just start by posting a well-thought-out short paragraph on your social media. It doesn't have to be complicated. It could be a simple, just so personally what I do is I like reading the word, so I spend time in the word and meditate. And then after that, whatever the Lord teaches me, I just post a thought on my social media platform. And many times I've realized that it has a ripple effect. Maybe somebody is going through a similar thing, and it just resonates with them, and then they get hooked, and so I'll encourage you. Of course, if you don't have a social media account, get one, and then start by just posting simple thoughts, whatever the Lord teaches you. Post on your social media account, and then actively invite people to reach out to you. Actively invite people to reach out to you for prayers. I was surprised that any time I reach out on my social media accounts, because I have Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, and ask people if they needed prayer, I'm always amazed by the response. Mm-hmm. You'll be amazed at how many people will reach out when you give an invitation and say, I'm open to pray with you, mm-hmm. or I'm open to listen. And so after you post a thought on your social media account, find time to follow through with just actively and intentionally inviting people to reach out to you. And then create time to follow through people's posts. And, you know, I don't know if this applies so much to the older generation, but I know that our generation, and not so much maybe my generation, but the younger generation, they can get really real on social media. Like what they post there many times is a reflection of truly what's going on in their lives. So personally, what I do is I go through people's status. I have a scheduled time where I just go through other people's WhatsApp status or other people's Instagram status. No, I have a scheduled time because you can get carried away. But I have a time where I go through that. And sometimes you may come across a post where someone says, oh, I had a bad day, or I don't really like my life, or something in those lines. Then I follow through with a message. And many times it's not just, they're not just bluffing on their status. It's a true reflection of what's going on in their hearts. And through that, I'm able now to really follow through. And out of that, many, many people have been, you know, impacted. We've been able to reach out to many young people. So how can I make an impact using online writing? And I say here, authenticity and consistency over being tech savvy. Authenticity and consistency over being tech savvy. So many times, you know, this was a temptation to me in the beginning, where I felt like I needed to have a very professional sounding message when I post on social media, you know, or on online platforms. But I realized that because of the wall, people can't see who's talking to them. People want to hear an authentic voice behind the media. So it's not so much about the grammar and you know, all those technical things. Now you need that for books, but for online, it's just a simple expression that people can resonate with. People can feel like this is a real person behind the screen that we can connect with. And then be consistent in that consistency and authentic over professionalism. So when I was younger, I used to wait for certain programs on the TV, and I knew this program would come around maybe 7 p.m. And I noticed sometimes I'd be playing soccer maybe with my friends, but because my mind is waiting for a program at 7, around 6:50 we all start becoming fidgety because we know there's a program at 7. And I noticed it works again in social media, where if you're consistent, you know, at a certain time and a certain hour, people unconsciously begin to expect what you will share. So I personally share once every week, a certain time, certain day, and I notice that sometimes when I don't post, then people come into my inbox and say, hey, it's been a while. What happened last week? We were waiting for your post. So when you're consistent and when you're authentic, subconsciously people begin to expect a message from you. And you can be amazed at how many people you end up discipling just by that consistent writing that you keep sharing online. And then simplicity and relatability. Simplicity, I think it goes hand in hand with the authenticity. It's just being simple and relatable, trying to share things that people can relate with. I mean, not being too vulnerable, but vulnerable enough that people can trust. So for instance, if I had an issue last week that really affected my mind or something, I can be vulnerable enough so that people know that, yeah, he's, because one of the barriers on social media is people think everyone is trying to present a version of themselves that they are not. So when they find a few authentic, simple people, then people trust that. And once they trust that, then they can really connect long term, and then you can now start having deeper conversations. And then lastly, I say intentionality and preparedness over randomness. Intentionality and preparedness over randomness. So I think I started noticing that. So personally, I started by saying that I look at the online platform as a house stop. So for me, when I go online, I treat it with the same sacredness as the way I'm standing here on this pulpit. I took time to prepare, I took time to pray, and sometimes I find that when it comes to online and what we share online, we think, oh, this is just online, so I won't pray about it, I won't prepare, whatever comes to my mind, I'll just throw it out there. But if we are to have impact, we need to treat it we need to be intentional. Spend time praying for the people that will read that message. Spend time, you know, preparing your heart. Truly ask God, what would you like me to share? What is it that I can share that will have an impact? And then preparing and then praying. And then even after you shared it, praying through the people that, you know, view it or comment. And you'll be amazed at how much impact that will happen, that will cause, you know, over this. So intentionality and preparedness over randomness. And I'm just encouraging us that the online, we have not scratched, as the church, we have not scratched the potential that the online platform has for the kingdom. And I hope that the few things that I've shared here will stir up a desire for us to go for it. And you don't have to be tech savvy. You know, it can be just a simple status that you put. Especially I find that when you're older, then it's more appealing to the younger generation when you open yourself up on social media. So thank you. God bless you.
Does anybody have any questions? Any questions? Excuse me. For Simon. Would you?
Yes. How do you pray with people online?
How do I pray with people online? So, yeah. So, in Africa, we use a lot WhatsApp. I don't know if many of you here maybe don't have WhatsApp, but even Instagram or Facebook has like the calling feature. So you schedule time and then just call and pray with people online. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find posts or video are more effective? Do they like to see your face, or is it more the text that you use?
I think it's both, because this is a writing workshop, so I'm talking more about writing. But even live videos have more impact than, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you were writing something,
yes.
Let's say Facebook or whatever. Let's say Facebook. What I mean, is it good to do two lines? Is it good to do two paragraphs? Is it, what's the guideline that you find is ideal for length?
Yeah. I think something that people can read within maybe a minute would be good. I don't know how many words that is, but something that people can read within a minute. And then another thing would be, so now Facebook has, or these social medias have introduced something where you can put the first, so the first line can be like catchy, and then you put like three dots, and when you put the three dots, they are hidden. So people can, they first read the first line before they see the content. So that's something else that you can use to like hook, hook people, yeah.
Sorry, I have another question. Do you, okay. Is every post very strongly evangelistic, strongly Christianese, strongly?
Yeah, I get that. I actually forgot to talk about that. But that's a very good question because, yeah, I think it's important to mix the idea is to build trust with the audience. So sometimes it's good to like, so sometimes, for instance, I would post a picture of me singing a song for my wife, which is very rare, but but the rare times that I'd post a picture of me singing a song to her, and that would just like, wow, so this, I'm not trying to whatever, but I'm just trying to create that trust with the people. And sometimes if something went wrong also with me, like for instance, there's a time I was sick, I'd post there and just ask guys for prayers. And then so whenever now I get the time to post something evangelistic, then there's trust that has been built and people can follow that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers. Yeah.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia. Thank you. You can still hold on to a few more questions. I don't think Sarah and I will take the whole time, so we can ask a few questions at the end as well. Welcome, everybody. This is very humbling to see all of you here. I just want to read from Jeremiah chapter 36, verse 1. In the fourth year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, the word came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Take a scroll and write on it all the words I have spoken to you concerning Israel, Judah, and all the other nations from the time I began speaking to you in the reign of Josiah until now. He was expected to remember a lot of things. Perhaps when the people of Judah hear about every disaster I plan to inflict on them, they will each turn from their wicked ways. Then I will forgive their wickedness and their sin. So Jeremiah called Baruch, son of Neriah, and while Jeremiah dictated all the words the Lord had spoken to him, Baruch wrote them on the scroll. So that's just a reminder to us of the importance of writing the message, what God has done, what God has told us, what God has taught us. And of course, we don't use scrolls, but we're hearing, I mean, there's online and there's ebooks and there's audiobooks and there's, of course, the still the traditional book and blogs and newsletters that we can use to write what God is saying. But God is saying in this passage, perhaps when they see it in writing, it will connect. They'll remember. It will make an impact in their lives. And writing is so important. So I just wanted to speak briefly today about a few questions of writing. Why, what, and who? And we will talk a little bit about how, although I think Sarah will talk more about how. Writing, of course, is one form of communication. We all know that. And communication is an essential element in any relationship. It's essential in every relationship that we focus, that we think about our communication. A relationship without communication probably isn't a relationship. I don't know if we can communicate relate with one another without communicating. And as Dove Christian Fellowship, we know that we value relationship. So that means we value communication. And when we're across the continents, of course, here in Sandy Cove, we can speak to one another face to face. But when we're across the continents, much of our communication will be through writing. And I think that writing is something that has, thank you, Larry Kreider, it's an honor to have you in this workshop, that through your writing, you've been able to mobilize and galvanized to call together this movement into vision, into purpose, into values. And we would desire that even as you move on to the next season and keep writing, that some of us would also be able to take up that mantle and see the vision being shared through writing, through good written material. So I just encourage us that writing is important. And there's something about writing that has influence. Somehow, how many times have you heard somebody say, I read somewhere that, you know, it's like, because I read it, it's like true. Okay, we know that not everything we read is true, right? And we know that people can write anything. But there's something about something written that people trust or that people put value in. It's like, yeah, it has to be that way because I saw it written. So there's an influence that comes through writing that maybe our spoken words sometimes don't carry. So why do you want to write? Most of you said you either want to write or have written or are thinking about writing in some form. Why? You have a message to share, hopefully. I just wanted to say up front, if you want to write to get rich, forget it. Okay. Don't go there. It's not going to work. Okay, unless you write a New York Times bestseller that sells 1 million copies or something. I mean, there are a few people in the world who have maybe gotten rich or made a profession out of writing. But yes, to express, to be known, do you want to write so that your name gets out there? Do you want to write to teach, to inspire, to instruct, to inform, to tell a story? It's important to know why am I doing this? Because I think when we know the why behind what we're doing, it gives us the impetus or the courage to keep going when it feels like I don't want to do this anymore. But why? And is it something that God is asking of you? I think is a very important question. If God is asking you to write, then that's a good enough reason, isn't it?
Yeah.
To get something down on paper. And what do we write? Well, there needs to be a message. I heard someone say, you know, mental health, is that what it is, or a physician or a teacher. So before you start, we don't write just because, okay, writing is an art form, yes. But I think that we need to know there has to be something in, there has to be content. I think that's what I want to say. We have to have content before we can just write it. You know, you don't write without content. Simon said that he reads the word, he hears what God is saying, so that content is what he wants to share. So, you know, what is it you want to write? What is the message that God has put on your heart? What is the portion of God's heart that he has put within you that he wants you to share with the rest of the world? What is that message? And once you know the message, it becomes a lot easier to obviously put it on paper, right? So the next question would be who? Who are we writing for? And I'll include in this, in what form? We've heard about online writing. There are blogs. Blogs are a very, very powerful tool for writing that has come up through social media. Books. Several of you mentioned books. I have a book inside. Maybe you would have an opportunity to write articles. Maybe it's newsletters. Maybe it's I said blogs, maybe just the online things. What is it? What form should it take? And then who are we writing to? It's two different things, but who are we writing to? I think, is it you, Larry, who says sometimes you put a picture of the person you imagine to be the audience in front of you so that you can write to them? Who is the audience? What do they like? What do they not like? What are their passions? What are their interests? What is their age? What's the demographic? We always have there's a word for it that I'm not getting, but we always have onlookers in anything we write, but there should be a target. Okay, sometimes I read a lot of things that people write in my editing work, and sometimes I read a book or a manuscript, I'm like, well, who is this for really? I mean, half of the book is evangelistic, half of the book is deep spiritual teachings, and like, who is supposed to be reading this? And I think it's very important that we decide who is supposed, is it a young audience? Is it an audience that is, you know, people that are troubled emotionally? That's another thing that sometimes we preach to the wrong audience. Like we're preaching to Christian leaders about why they shouldn't get addicted to alcohol. You know, it's like who are we writing to? And it's very important to think through that and think who your audience is. As I said, there'll always be onlookers. There'll always be other people who will pick up what you read or read something that wasn't necessarily intended specifically for them. But understanding the audience is very important. And then when you understand the audience, you'll know what makes them laugh, what makes them angry, what makes them happy, what makes them... And getting all those emotions activated as people read what you have written will make that, what you have written, sink in. It will make it more effective. So knowing your audience is very important. In terms of how to go about writing, I would just say that writing is a process. Of course, if you're writing a blog, you can probably wake up in the morning and write your blog and post it, and nobody has to check, and nobody has to design it, and nobody has to do whatever. But if we're talking about book writing, I just want to encourage you that for good book writing, and of course we believe in excellence as the children of the Most High, excellent God, we believe in excellence. And we believe that excellence is what will testify well of who we are as believers and who our God is. So I'm a very, very big champion of excellence. I think Sarah would probably say the same thing. Sometimes when you see shoddy things out there in the name of Christianity, I just was like, no, let's not do that. Let's do it well. Let's do it well. So in order to do writing well, when we're talking about books, we need a team. We need people around us. And it's a process. I've been writing, the last 7 or 8 years, I've been writing curriculum for Kenyan schools. And sometimes it's really discouraging because what comes out in the end is like, I hardly even recognize it, you know? And yet I know that it's better. I know that it's better, that many people worked on it, that many people had their hand in it, that many people influenced it and adjusted it and edited it and designed it. And you can take confidence in knowing that whatever I put on paper to start with has been improved. But I'm saying that to say, you don't just write something or type something and then send it for print, okay, or send it for publication. There are people called editors. There are people called designers. There are people who are trained to help your writing be better. There are friends who can say, you can say, hey, can you read this? Does it make sense? Does it communicate? Let's allow God to take us through the process that's involved in really producing good written materials. If it's a Bible study book or a devotional book, Many books I've seen recently have, like, the at the end you can use this study questions and use it as a group and that kind of thing. Try it out on a small group that you lead or that's in your church. Give the materials to a group and ask them for feedback. Was it helpful? Was it useful? Were the questions positive? Did it make sense? Before you print 10,000 copies and stay with 9,900 of them in your closet, you know? I mean, so allow the process, go through the process and just know that other people can help us, me included, to get good material out there that will glorify the name of the Lord and be effective. We want to write things that people will read. And writing what will be read. One of the biggest enemies of good writing is clutter. Too much clutter, too much, too many words, too much said. I usually think of words as pennies or nickels or dimes or shillings. It's like every time I put one down there, I'm spending a shilling. So don't use more than you have to, right? How many of us don't like to spend more than we have to spend? Don't use more words than you have to. It's amazing how much can be edited out or cut out of our writing and the message still gets through. Now we might want to fill up a book, you know, but as Steve Backlund showed us, the ones that are the thin, you know. So use words carefully. And again, that I would say that's where editors can help. And if an editor cuts out half your work, don't trash the editor. Tell them thank you. Okay. Because it probably didn't need to be there. You probably could have said it in less words. But people don't have time. Oh, what? who of us likes to spend time with anything that we don't have time for, that we're not gaining from, that we're not benefiting from? Mm. How often have you picked up a book and read the first page and not looked at? Honestly,
yeah.
Don't we do that?
Yeah.
We read the first page, the second page, the back. It didn't connect. It didn't speak to us. It didn't shout to us. We didn't have time for it. So let's do our very, very best to write what people will read. And that means, that involves several things. That involves being personable, authentic, as Simon has talked about. It involves being, authentic. Whenever there's a personal story, an authentic personal story, that people will connect with that. Even it might be a Bible teaching, it might be whatever, but put in those personal stories, the anecdotes, and help people to feel and touch and smell and see. We often say to use the senses, don't tell, but show. Show, don't tell. So you can talk about a room and tell about it, or you can bring out the descriptive words. Sorry, I don't have something on my fingertips as an example, but I think you know what I mean. Use the adjectives, use the adverbs, help people to taste and to see what you're describing, rather than saying, my husband is very handsome. Okay, I can say he walked in the room in a dazzling shirt and bright smile, warming the atmosphere with his whatever, you know. So you felt it, you touched it. I came up with that. Yeah. So these are some of the kind of the hints of good writing. But most of all, I think the most important thing I would say is start doing it. Do it.
Start.
Pen to paper. Okay, I had a workshop one time, pen to paper. Of course, these days it's not pen to paper, it's fingers to keyboard or whatever it might be, whatever means you use. And find the best means. Many times when I write, as much as I'm a very fast typist, I still use a pen and a paper. There's something about it that gets the inspiration out of me more than the keyboard does. But whatever works for you. But just get something down. Get something down. You mentioned you had an outline. Outlines are very important, particularly if you're thinking of a larger work, because this is something else that I've found in many books. I've read the first chapter, I've read the second chapter, third, same, fourth, the same. I mean, I stop at the fifth, maybe there's 10 chapters, but you're just hearing the same. I don't know, does anybody find that?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing, and then it's the same thing, and then it's the same thing, and it's like, well, did you have a plan before you started writing, you know? Yeah, I question the authors. Did you have a plan? Were you going to take us somewhere? Are you just going to regurgitate the same things over again? So having an outline, having a plan, I'm going to start with this and work on this and work on this, and different people write differently. Some would do short notes and then fill in those notes. If that works for you, do it that way. I wouldn't say there's a formula. Some people, like for me, I might have a broad outline, but I write paragraph by paragraph in full as I write. In other words, then I can go back and cut it out later, but I don't just do short notes and then fill them up. I edited a book for House to House that the person said some of the chapters are done and some of them are still in short notes, and I was like, oh, okay, because I went through her notes and she literally had like bullet points for every paragraph, but the paragraphs weren't developed. Well, that wouldn't work for me, okay, but that was her way of writing, and so it worked. I think it was a lady. It worked for her to do that. So, but just figure out what works for you, but there needs to be a plan, especially if you're doing a larger document. What message do I want to communicate? Who am I communicating it to? And how am I going to organize those thoughts? Now, there could be a personal testimony. Maybe you just want to tell your story. That powerful, powerful, powerful. That might not have quite as much of an outline or, you know. And yet you would want to get the key events. Like there was this and there was this and there was this, and follow through those events chronologically. And Sarah has my watch. I don't, so I don't know. I don't know how much time I've taken. But I think we'll welcome Sarah to give us some tips.
Since Larry is here, I'll get to one of the stories. I brought along stories to talk about too. All of you received a Connection magazine, and in it there's an article that Larry wrote. And Larry, you want to tell us how many times you wrote it?
Probably three or four.
Yes.
So I wrote along, and
get anything?
I guess what I want, if anybody gets anything out of what I say, it's I want to encourage you that it's growing. It's a growing and it's a process, like Diane said. I mean, just start. Don't worry about perfection. This what Larry was doing was part of a team, and he did. I felt bad. He had to, he wrote it like three times, and you know we and then and one of the proofreaders still cut it down. So it's sort of like it's a process. Be confident in the Lord that you've got good words, and many times it won't be that difficult. So that's the good news. And I brought some examples of how things can grow. Like this is the called together book. This started as a ring binder probably 30 years ago. And it would be interesting to know how much of this content is still the same because it's grows, it's changed with cultural changes and just improvements. This book, you know, and Steve continues to improve it every couple of years. So your writing can be dynamic. I mean, don't feel like I have to finish it and then I'm done. It's start working. And it becomes a moving project. And then sometimes the next project comes because of one project, comes quickly behind it. This one took years behind, but it's very similar in nature. Staying together is a cousin to Call Together that helps strengthen people who are married already, and they work together. The Church Planning Made Practical by Jeff Hoagland and Ron Meyer was in notebook format for years. It was just simply outline. If you feel like I've got content but I don't know how to write it all out, sometimes just bullet points, like Diane was mentioning, can be okay. You know, this book was in bullet form for, I don't know, 20 years? And then Jeff Hoagland got involved and some other people got involved and it became a book, added more content, more people got involved, Larry got involved, and it became a book that is a little more helpful than the ring binder was for more detail. So again, it was not a fast project. If you're getting some of my ideas here, that it's year by year, season by season, things can grow. Now this is, Larry, you wrote this and then rewrote it for a new season. So how many years was it? Was it in print?
Like 20-some
years ago, I wrote it. Yeah, so 20 years you wrote it and then you rewrote it, updated. Of course, the cover changed and was updated, but that the good thing about once content is written, like Simon has a lot of content, even if it's small amounts that could be put together, made in composite into a devotional book, a teaching book, you know, whatever, just something else. So when you have it written, it can become something else and can grow into a new season as well, with a fresh cover and fresh content. And then this is a small thing. Small things are valuable too. Danny Tenevi's book is an example of a small thing that's valuable. It's a good teaching tool that maybe may help other people who would be intimidated by a long book. I can read this, or and it's very. This is pulled out of another book. It's out of the Biblical Foundation books on a certain topic on tithing. It's just small. But churches have bought it to hand out just to help people in their congregation understand one topic. So it doesn't have to be broad, covering everything. Your words could be key just for a certain season, for a certain teaching series that your small group's doing or your church is doing. Small can be better. This book grew. It wasn't thick as it started, and it took editors and another editor, more reading, more writing, and it happened over COVID, so that didn't help. It happened smoothly either, but today it's a very useful tool that has become an audiobook and become an ebook, which that's steps after things are written. But guess what? Amazon wants the written book first. Then you can create the audiobook. Then you can create the ebook. Which you can do an ebook before a print book, but you still have to have a book, words in print, words written down, that can help teach, guide, correct, bring God's word to life for others. So, as both the other presenters talked about, being authentic is so important. Sharing what God showed you in a real way, not with religious words or not trying to impress people. Just genuinely sharing the truth that God has showed you can really bring change to the world around you. And who knows, the rooftop that you've given, that God may open for you, could change nations. So who wants to stop that? So we can open up for questions at the end here. For any of you, Diane, Simon, does anybody have any questions, comments? Go ahead, Diane.
I wanted to just add something that I forgot. I don't know if any of you bought any of Steve Backlund's books, or if you have one with you. Did you notice the way that many of them are written? It's just like one page. I don't know. It's one page or two pages, one page. Did you notice that? I mean, it's another unique way. I don't think it's... some of them are 40 days. Okay, fully convinced. I've not looked at this one. Yeah, this one is written as more as a normal book. But some of them are... like the one about laugh and the one about help me, I'm a pastor, or whatever. It's just one page.
In a chapter,
Mike? They're one-page entries. I don't think they're intended as necessarily devotion. I'm just saying there are many creative ways to write. And that's the kind of thing that somebody can pick up, read a page. Yeah, I got something for that. Pick up and the next day, read another page. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be long, extended, 70,000 word book.
Yeah.
You can start, make it unique in whatever works for you. That's what I wanted to say. There are many formats to follow. That's what I wanted to say.
And the good news is one of the projects Diane helped with was a man wrote sort of a biography, 110,000 words, and it didn't need to be that long, so it became a 75,000 word book that also had another book that he spun off. So, he had good intentions. It wasn't quite there, but you know what? It was amazing, and it did bring change to people, even if it wasn't exactly as long as he thought it needed to be. Mm-hmm. It became a great project that sold quite a few. Mm-hmm. Questions from anybody? Comments?
I had a question.
Camille has a question.
Sarah, I would just simply want to say that.
Why don't you come up?
I would simply want to say that every book I've written with a team. Sarah's been in every team. Diane's been in quite a few, and others. And so if you get a team of people around you, it makes a big, big difference. I'm not a great editor, I do editing, but I'm not that great at it. And you have to be secure when you do that. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote that connection article, I've been writing articles for the next forever, but because the other things are written in there, and feedback back to me was, I should just shift the focus a bit. So I did it again. You have to be secure in that.
Mm-hmm.
But a team is really, really, really important.
Yeah. Camila? Go ahead.
Hello. I have a question. If I'm, according to what I've heard, big writers here and editors talking about, there's this issue with, I wrote a book I gave to my editor, Sarah Silva, to edit for me. And I had maybe 50,000 words, but then now my book is 20,000 words. How am I secure and sure that what I've written is what is there? How does it work? Because maybe there is a way I speak, maybe there is a way I communicate, but then, my identity, because we're speaking about identity with Pastor Simon, and it's like, where is my identity in all that? Because I understand that from the point of view of editing, we can say something with lesser words, and maybe we try changing it as we edit, and then, because the reason why I'm asking this is because there is a certain man of God, back in Mozambique, a certain pastor, he wrote a book, and we have heard him preach, and we know how he talks. He has very simple language when he talks. He does it in a very simple way. But then when we read the book, we were astonished. Like, this is not your book. It's like we couldn't feel that, because we have read books of like a part of it that we have heard that is like it connects. It connects.
Yeah.
Like the book and the person, okay, there is a connection. But for this pastor specifically, when we read the book, we said, I think this is not him. No, it's not him. But some chapters later, we could now connect. I was like, I think now here it's him. There, I don't know who it was, but I know this is him now. Because there is a way you can talk that if I've heard your voice before, I can
you hear the voice.
Even hear your voice. I'm like, oh, yes, this is Mama. This is Mama Diane. I feel it. But then if it's not, So I would really like to know how do we overcome that to be able to write a book, give to my editors, trust them that they will not remove my identity from the book. Like, how does this?
Some of it would be getting an editor that would be recommended, or maybe talking to a friend. Diane evaluates work and then gives feedback to the author. She doesn't necessarily change everything. And some of it is making sure your voice does not get lost. We talk about that sometimes, how much of the writer's voice we want the writer's voice to come through. So that's when we work. And obviously you can have a poor editor that changes things too much or doesn't change things enough. It's a trust. But a big thing I actually have at the top of my page here, which we mentioned a bit, but get a prayer team around. If you're doing a big project or even a consistent one like Simon, I mean, have a prayer team for what you're doing. And then trust God to open up doors. And sometimes, like Larry had one editor he did not like. Okay, so it's just, it was.
Can I explain that?
Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, one of the first, when I wrote the book House to House, and we had somebody trying to kind of help. You know, I read a lot of it, and they're just trying to help. And when I read what they wrote, it wasn't me at all. And I said, I can't have this. This is not who I am. Because people who read my books will say, I think I can hear you talking to it.
Yes. Right, or it's just,
and,
that's good.
So I think I, too, I forget who the second one was. They're really good people, but it was just their own style.
Yeah.
It takes the right person to work with you.
A good editor should not, I mean, we should maybe have an editor's workshop sometimes. That's a good editor should not change your voice.
That's true.
Yes. If you feel like your voice has been canceled out, then get your original manuscript back and start. Take round two with a different editor. And then the other situation could be it might have been a ghostwriter, somebody writing that's put somebody else's name on it. The one you said you didn't hear the person. Yeah. I mean, and that happens a lot also, but anyway, some people, that's a whole different topic. But.
Or maybe they used AI. Go ahead.
So just, let me just pick up on this. Yeah, that's why I'm here. So I'm guilty as discharged. I've just been feeling like I really need to get it out, but feeling overwhelmed at the same time, like, okay, how do I start? Where do I start? Yeah, you know? So, yeah, I'm definitely, I was actually thinking about it before you even spoke up. I see I'm definitely coming for you after this, so, yeah. Yes.
Just have one question. For a novice, new to the entire field, thinking about it, looking to jump in, you talk about getting the right team, identifying the right team. How do I identify, know who I'm looking for to be on my team?
There's a variety of people that you would be on your team. Somebody to pray, the repair team, get some people to pray from friends, maybe some peers, your mentor, have people around you that pray, encourage you in this.
Is it possible you could speak a little slower?
Okay, sorry. Other people who are parts of the writing experience, such as like someone who's an English teacher, may help with grammar. Someone who is, you know, even a writer friend, someone who even a blogger friend. Everyone's gonna look. Everybody's team will look different. But there's someone who can look at it for theology. Different ages is good. Some older people, like if you're doing a book that's for a broad age group, then get people from the various age groups to look at it, read it, give feedback. Some people are better at giving feedback than others, so it would be something that's developed too. I mean, you may ask them one time, but or you may come back for more, just depending on if they have the time and they take time to really read and give feedback. Developing a team, you know, book by book, like Larry mentioned, his team has changed year by year. Different proofreaders, different editors, different people read for content. To sharpen his ideas is what it is. It's not to take over the project. It's to sharpen what's happening. But it comes back to just go ahead and start writing, start journaling. You can rearrange. You can change. You can add. But if you don't start, okay, start writing, and then you can change, and you can add, subtract. Go ahead.
But I have been writing for a long time. I have a pile of journal.
Okay.
So everything the Lord tells me, I write down right now. And I have been working on this, my first book, this project. And I do have a contact with a few people that are connected with publishing these things.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They are Christian and have some knowledge. But I was curious when you talk about the team, exactly what kind of interaction you have as for the book project. These people that you talk, these people that you send email, also the question that I have is in which stage these people get involved. It's like when the Lord is just giving you this general idea and brainstorming, or that is certain stage of the book that you get people more involved in your project.
Yeah. Everyone's project is different, and everyone and every book is different. But for me, I mean, Sarah and I worked together on projects from day one, so she kind of helps manage the team. She works now with Diane often on the editing side, and that's been helpful, and many other people. I've had assistant writers, you know, doing good, who would take some of my material, and I'd say, you know, I'd begin to write and say, now add this to it, and add this to it, and we just kind of work back and forth like that. So it's different for everyone. I have a Peter Bunton, most of my books he's read because he's good with theology, you know. And I just want to emphasize what Abram said. Telling stories is powerful. Tell stories. If we tell stories, they'll remember the story, then they'll remember the biblical truth. So telling stories is really, really important. And I mean, if too little time or late, but Amazon has changed the face of publishing, and you can go one on one more with Sarah about that. Self-published today. And please stay away from companies that make you pay lots of money.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. There are yes. Christian companies yes. make you pay lots of money.
Yes.
And I sat with a pastor 2 weeks ago, a week ago, and he said, I've been offered this company for taking my book, and he's excited. but I got to pay $12,000. So he's going to be careful with all that.
It's, yeah, it's not necessary to spend $12,000 on a book these days. That it's just not. It's if you want more information, you can contact me. If you want to write down my email address, I didn't have a handout this time. Sarah S, S-A-R-A-H-S, at dcfi.org.
Can you say it again?
Sarah, S-A-R-A-H-S, yes. At dcfi.org. I'd love to answer questions.
Can I add one thing to the
sure.
team?
Sure.
I didn't mention, when I wrote the first book, accountability partner. If you want
oh,
to write,
yeah, somebody to keep you.
It's good to have an accountability partner that asks you.
How you
right. That holds you accountable to the project that you're putting forth.
It's yep. good, yeah.
Super helpful.
Thank you to the three of you. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you and God bless you.